There is more than one way to accomplish a goal. And indeed, Kotzen Kahn gave this concept a name, equifinality, in their famous book, The Social Psychology of Organizations. But people tend to think that there is a right or better way to do change, choosing certain tools when they reflect one's preferred way of doing things, and then criticizing decisions by others to use different tools. So, if there are multiple ways to pursue one's goal of a needed change effort, how does one choose? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. Certainly in the various headquarters that I've served in during my military career, I saw a lot of change efforts, and I saw a lot of different ways of approaching them. Whether they're internally generated by an organization or externally generated outside the organization. The challenge sometimes is that a commander or a leader, any leader, will come in with a certain preferred way of approaching change and making things happen in the organization. And this will often come in the form of ways of aligning how they perceive the organization, the information that they consider to be important, and the types of information as presented in which drives them to make decisions, such as to initiate change, to sustain change, to decide to cancel the effort or move it in a different direction. The range that I saw involved things like commanders who would come in who would want to exercise participative activities, they'd use working groups, or they'd use sensing sessions or the like, whereas others would prefer to go with carrots and sticks. They'd essentially use rewards and sanctions as drivers of change. And so as I reflected on this, on these various efforts and noticing how differently the different commanders, it struck me when I would come across a particular book chapter by Robert Chin and Kenneth Benet early on in my doctoral studies a few years ago, in which they talk about general strategies of organizational change. In this book chapter, which I'll reference in the website, it basically took like dozens of change strategies that have been used throughout the course of organizational development history, and found that some of them were follow-ons from previous work, but they basically clustered around a few different general strategies, as they put it. What I found interesting was then I took their general strategies, of which they numbered three, and I discussed this with my students. And initially, perhaps it was a little bit too arcane to them in just sort of presenting it directly as in the book, because of course the focus of Chin and Benny's chapter was basically to lay out that these clusters existed. I decided to take a slightly different approach to, rather than looking at historically, I used sort of a hypothetical situation in which you had a organization, like a military organization, that frequently changes its leadership, and presented it where the different leaders would come through trying to solve the same problem using a different general strategy. And I found it to be rather interesting and in some ways effective in trying to explain that, you know, when you really get down to it, you see how leaders come in with different ideas about how to formulate or pursue the same change goals, but they really boil down to a rather finite set. And if you can understand what that finite set is, then you can pretty much understand in advance sort of what the strengths and the weaknesses of that general strategy is going to be. So let me present you with the sort of fictionalized approach that I use, and I call it the story of the four commanders. And it's four, not three, because in my experience, particularly in a military context, I found that one of Chin and Benet's general strategies actually kind of broke out into two. So what I want you to do is I want you to imagine an organization that has an intense recurring need for conducting maintenance on its equipment. It requires the equipment to basically to be able to accomplish its mission, and it becomes incumbent on the organizational members to perform that maintenance. The operators are generally responsible. But let's just say that this organization has had a problem. Less than an acceptable rate of their equipment has been available for conducting the mission. And you can imagine, like with firefighters and some other kinds of organizations, that this would be a serious problem. So then you imagine a succession of leaders coming through the organization. And the first one, let's just say that the first one comes in, recognizes the problem, and decides that rewards and sanctions are going to be the basic approach. Okay, so those subordinate organizations, well, the best ones who basically demonstrate either greatest improvement or the highest equipment availability rate gets rewarded, and the lowest ones get either sanctioned or not given the same reward or not given a reward at all, with the idea of trying to use that carrot and stick approach in order to affect change. And you can imagine that over the course of the leader's tenure, that approach might work for a while because, hey, the leader's rewarding this, we better get on board, we better do our best to improve our rates, otherwise, bad things might happen. But then you can imagine how that perhaps if the rewards aren't applied consistently, or the everybody winds up ultimately getting the reward and then it doesn't really become a reward at all, or circumstances beyond the organization's control sort of intervene, and it starts to fall apart. Perhaps members find very interesting ways of circumventing the sanctions by making themselves look minimally good or something like that. It just depends on how these rewards and sanctions are applied over time. But it's very hard to apply them consistently if you're not careful. Now, if we imagine a distributed organization, maybe the rewards and sanctions are weighted too close to the headquarters or too much to the remote organizations. So the first leader departs, and what has happened during the tenure is that some things got better, some things perhaps didn't, and some things might have gotten worse. Maybe some bad habits crept in. But there you go. Second one comes in. All right. The second one decides, well, maybe rewards and sanctions are not that leader's preferred approach. We're going to do something different. We're going to try looking at this as a training problem. Perhaps the operators are not sufficiently skilled or knowledgeable, as much as they think they are, on the way to make the equipment work, to keep the equipment up and running. And so either inside experts or perhaps outside experts, if the commander is in some way connected, come in and we have training sessions. We have events. We have some other sort of a forum by which the skills and the knowledge of the organizational members are enhanced. So that goes on. And then we sit back and see if the training had an effect. Well, let's see. Maybe it did. Maybe there were some training gaps, or maybe some training reinforcement was helpful. But then again, maybe there are some other factors that the organization can't control, such as high turnover rates. Perhaps the problem is that the equipment was not properly designed and that there are systemic flaws that constantly increase the rates that the operators can't control or can't do anything about. So perhaps you can imagine some frustration setting in that the training didn't have the fullest possible effect. Training also, especially if you're doing it internally, can be a bit of a drain on the organization, can take a lot of energy. So just as with the first commander, maybe some things got better. Maybe some things didn't change. Maybe some things ultimately got worse. And the second commander leaves. The third one comes in. Now, what is the third one like? Oh, they like numbers. This one, maybe it was an operations research systems analyst or ORSA type, or somebody else with a very serious quantitative bent. and everything's got to be about the numbers. Perhaps such a commander would understand that there are factors that are beyond the organization's control. And so the numbers or the data has got to support the idea of where is the fault falling? Where's the problem? Where's the real problem? Factor analysis, all sort of statistical analysis going in, heavy reporting of collection of data, interpretation, analysis. And the numbers are what drive the decisions. So then ultimately, some things can usually typically come good from it, because certainly data can show things that ordinary just day-to-day experience might not illuminate. On the other hand, if you live and die by the numbers, sometimes one can start learning to manipulate the statistics to make themselves look good, or that the numbers may drive decisions that the organization doesn't necessarily make sense to the organization. So some, you know, frustration or cynicism may come in over time. And by the time that the third commander leaves, again, some things may have gotten better, other things not so much. Some things may have gotten worse. And so the third commander leaves. The fourth commander comes in and decides that all of the previous approaches were way off base. Nothing is coming in and working top down, so we got to go bottom up. We got to get into the perspectives of the individual members of the organization, learn from what it is that's going on, what they see as the problem of equipment maintenance. And so that's when you start seeing working groups, you see sensing sessions, you see a lot of collaboration, a lot of talk, a lot of observation. And it's certainly good. I mean, there's whole methodologies for change built around participative activities. But they can be a drain of energy on the organization, especially if members already kind of think they know what's going on and are, or perhaps because of the approaches used previously, might be suspicious of them. So, you know, perhaps change comes about a little bit slow. Perhaps these sessions don't necessarily provide the leader with the full story of what's going on because of hidden agendas or a lack of trust or something to that nature. But of course, certainly there'll be some good things that come out of it. Some things will change because there will be discussion, and the discussion may be fruitful. And once again, the fourth commander leaves. Perhaps some things got better, perhaps some things got worse, and other things stayed the same. So over the course of four different leaders, you might have seen some overall slow progress towards fixing a problem. But again, each of the different general strategies discussed, which again mirror the ones from Chin and Bene, they each had strengths and they each had weaknesses. And I was glossing over it very broadly. Obviously, the context of the individual organization is going to be vastly different. But the first commander followed the power coercive general strategy that Chin and Bene highlighted. And the power coercive strategy is kind of along the lines of using conflict and confrontation, power, those all sorts of activities are sort of aligned with what the first commander was trying to accomplish. The second and the fourth commanders were using normative or re-educative strategies. Now, I split them because the normative or the therapeutic look is kind of different in practice, I believe, than the re-educative, which is training and situational change. And some examples on the normative side might be include action research. It can include the works of Lewin, some of the works of Dewey, whereas the training re-educative side was more like industrial sociology of Mayo or Roethlisberger. And then the third one was the rational empirical approach, which was basic drawn from classical liberalism, according to Chin and Bene, And that includes things like scientific management, Taylorism, psychometrics. So, you know, what I try to get out of this is that, you know, it's not so much to try to match what it is that the organizational development literature has offered, but to kind of turn to, say, my students and say, all right, which of these four commanders best suit you? You're the fifth commander. You're going to be the one to follow these four. Which one are you going to choose? Inevitably, some of the response I get is that, well, a lot of the activities or their preferred strategy is going to be some hybrid of these four, that there's going to be some measure of following the numbers, some measure of using normative approaches, like in the military, they're fond of action after action reviews, where everybody after an exercise gets together and talks about what happened, what went wrong, that sort of thing. Okay? And there's a lot of training involved, and of course, you know, rewards and sanctions are endemic in the way that militaries run things, and it's no doubt other organizations do the same. But as a general strategy, what I would insist is that, yeah, you can use some, you know, you can claim to use some sort of a hybrid, but real deep down, your preference is probably going to be strongly aligned with one of those four approaches. You may welcome participative approaches, but if you're a numbers person, ultimately the numbers are going to be the things you gravitate towards to decide whether or not you feel like you have enough information to make a decision and to decide what kind of a decision that's going to be. If you are a person that likes to use power and control as your mechanisms, you will gravitate towards using carrots and sticks as the way of driving change, even though the other general strategies may provide some sort of a flavor. So I turned it into a self-awareness exercise. Which of these do you prefer? And then think about the organization's culture, because the members of the organization may very well have their preferences too. Even when, say, the leader and the followers align, they have the same preferences, that doesn't necessarily mean that things are going to go smoothly. As a matter of fact, sometimes, you know, strengths overemphasized may become a vulnerability. Sometimes it's better for a new leader to come into an organization and say, I need to shake things up. I just need to do something differently if a change effort isn't producing the type of progress that we would expect. If it seems like you're making a step forward here, but other areas are getting worse because people figure out the vulnerabilities. So the overall takeaway, again, I think this is a good, useful tool for trying to understand what is it that you prefer, say, as a leader in an organization trying to drive change. What are the methods in which you understand information, make decisions, and how do you explain how change is going to happen in the organization? How do you talk people about, all right, you've got the vision. This is what we need to accomplish. We need the organization to have its equipment maintenance done better. Here are the ways. This is what the way to the vision is going to look like. And if that can be communicated, and if the strengths and the vulnerabilities of that can be well understood, then perhaps the ways, the path to the vision, might be a little bit easier to follow. And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.